Please welcome to the stage, Christina Halverson.
Hi there. Isn't it time for happy hour? You guys are, you must really need some content therapy. I'm here to give it to you, man. All right. So thanks a lot for coming. It's a pleasure to be here. This is like my sixth or seventh time speaking at South by Southwest. The session titles just keep getting weirder. But mine stay cool and calm and about content. So I want to talk about content marketing today. I'm a content strategist. And if you know anything about me, one thing you'll know is that I've been basically kind of trolling the content marketing community for the last 10 years. I have been really outspoken about the idea of content marketing as a mandate for every single organization. And in fact, have really pushed back publicly against kind of the pundits who are like, content marketing is going to solve all of your problems. This is a pretty typical rage tweet from me. So this has been going on for quite some time. You will imagine then my surprise when in 2015 I was invited to keynote Content Marketing World. So I got up in front of about 4,000 content marketers and said, content marketing, what's the deal with that? And really what I wanted to do is just kind of highlight some of the ridiculousness that I'd seen companies going after over the last couple of years. And so in order to do this, I made up this pretend client of mine, right? And it was a paper products client. And there was this paper products client that had really embraced content marketing as kind of the way forward in digital marketing. And to really illustrate my point, I made up these articles, you know, that this paper company might put, you know, six ways to wipe up any mess, how paper napkins bring families together, and, you know, 10 easy ways to store paper towels. I thought I was hilarious. So imagine my surprise again when 1 month later, somebody sent me an article from Ad Age that announced that giant paper products company Georgia-Pacific had purchased 1,400 pieces of content from Meredith. This is real. I thought you guys were going to be dying of laughter, and instead what I'm seeing on your faces is, ooh. The article they figured or featured was, in fact, five clever ways to store toilet paper. When asked what he was doing, the CMO said, we set out on an ambitious path to marry compelling content with innovative media to drive consumer engagement. When asked what he was going to write about, the senior VP of Meredith said, it is a challenge. These aren't always topics it's easy to draft content around that's of interest to consumers. To which I replied, you guys, there are so many My Little Pony gifs online. Just don't go too far down the rabbit hole. I had to turn on safe search at one point. It was not pretty. So then we take a step back and we see sort of the state of affairs with Georgia-Pacific content marketing. We have the history of toilet paper available on angelsoft.com. If you go to Dixie Paper Products, you know, like Dixie Cups, you can read six time wasters and how to crush them. If you go to Sparkle Paper Towels, you can read all about when dad is all about being yourself. Of course, to try to get in some relevant content, they did offer at the bottom, don't forget to download a coupon, which, let's be real, is the only reason any of us are ever going to visit sparkletowel.com. Okay, what happened? What happened that we were all collectively hypnotized by this idea that content marketing was absolutely for everyone? What happened that Fortune 100 company Georgia-Pacific decided to invest well over $1 million in content that nobody cares about? Well, in order to examine this, I want to take a very big step back and have you guys take a look with me at a pretty standard business operating framework. You'll recognize these. I tried to come up with a nice, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, I vimsgut, that didn't work out. So at any rate, let's walk through this together just to make sure that we're all on the same page about what these things mean. So an organization's vision is our ideal future state, not necessarily for our organization, but for the world at large, okay? Mission is what it is that we as an organization exist to do. Our goal is a long-term measurable outcome. Strategy is a key initiative to create meaningful change. An objective is a shorter-term measurable outcome. A tactic is an activity that we undertake to achieve our objectives. And a target is a metric for success. Phones up, my friends, phones up. All right, are we good? Pretty good? I'll come back to this. I'll put these slides online. You can stare at it all you want. I still got phones up. Are you recording me? What's up? All right, so let's take a look at what we think happened here. I'm going to make this up because, ironically, I couldn't find their vision or mission anywhere on their corporate site. Okay, so vision, Georgia Pacific paper products in every home. Mission, to clean up everybody's mess. Georgia Pacific, call me. All right, goal, lift consumer product revenue by 5%. Let's say that this was an associated goal that marketing had been assigned. We need to see some results here, okay? The strategy that was chosen was content marketing. The objective, published 1,400 articles. The tactic was to hire Meredith. And the target was consumer engagement. Are you seeing what I'm seeing here? Because what I'm seeing here is that content marketing, in this instance, was actually a tactic. And that the target was to publish 1,400 articles. And that, in fact, there was a complete and total lack of any sort of key initiative to instigate meaningful change. So if you're going to buy 1,400 pieces of content, don't dump them all on the floor and call them a content strategy. I got more. They're going to just keep coming. Let's talk about content strategy. Content strategy guides the creation, delivery, and governance of useful, usable content. This is a definition that I introduced in a book in 2009. It's held up pretty well. If you go into any organization, you're going to hear 42,000 different definitions of what content strategy is. I'm going to ask you guys to roll with me on this one because we're going to dig into it a little bit more deeply to demonstrate how content strategy is actually a much clearer picture to reflect the complex content activities within our organizations that have an impact on our ultimate product quality. So here's a framework I'd like to introduce to you that essentially shows us two sides of the content strategy coin. The first is our content design, and the second is systems design, where systems design really sits as a foundation for our ongoing content lifecycle. The purpose of content strategy is to help us define, prioritize, integrate, systematize, and measure our content activities. Okay, so content strategy helps us define that key initiative that will allow for meaningful change and then works to integrate all of these activities. So let's talk about these activities for just a second. So when I talk about content design, I refer to the definitions that Sarah Richards, who does Content Design London in the UK and who is responsible for helping totally transform gov.uk into a user-centered website experience. She says, content design uses data and evidence to give the audience what they need at any time they need it and in a way that they expect. So the two sides of content design are editorial. And in editorial and editorial strategy, we tackle the following questions. What is, as an organization, or as a publication, or as a group of social media channels, what is our editorial mission? What is it that we exist to do? Who are our target audiences? What is our point of view? What brand and language standards do we need to comply with? What is our voice and tone? And what is our publishing cadence? I can't tell you the number of content marketing teams I've spoken to where, whether it's one person or 100 people, there isn't a clear answer to all of these questions. And what I would propose is that if we're going to commit to content as a key publishing asset in our marketing initiatives, let's at least take a good start and make sure that all of these have been addressed. And as we're thinking about these, let's talk to the folks in design and user experience design, because how that content is delivered out in the world is also going to have a huge impact on its effectiveness. What are our users' needs and preferences? What does our overall content ecosystem look like? Where is our content appearing? What are our customers' journeys? Not the journeys we wish they would take, but the ones that they actually want to take. What formats will our content take throughout the user journey? How will design patterns shape our content on mobile and beyond? And then what metrics will we use to measure our content performance? I find that very few of these questions are thoughtfully tackled by content marketing teams. And that is for two reasons. One, in that it's just not in their purview and nobody's ever asked them. Or two, there's such a disconnect between the work that they're doing and the work that's being done by the user experience team, and there's no bridge there to be able to integrate those activities. So let's talk about systems design. Systems design, and this is a dictionary definition, is the process of defining the architecture, modules, and data for a system to satisfy specified requirements. So our content requirements have been set out in our editorial strategy and our experience designs. Now we need to create the systems that will uphold them and make that content findable, reusable, and useful. So this is where structure comes in, our content structure. How are we going to have our content organized so that people can intuitively browse it and find what they're looking for? What tags are we using that are the most intuitive for our users? How are we going to categorize content for effective content management? How are we going to structure our content for future reuse? And what are the content requirements for personalization, dynamic delivery, and, God help us, AI? Okay. And then finally, process. This seems straightforward. We have tools. We have tools that are supposed to streamline uploading, distributing, publishing, measuring our content. But ultimately, the commonalities between processes with the people who are doing editorial, the people who are doing user experience, the people who are doing structure can be few and far between. And so this is where we all come together to talk about how can we create new efficiencies with our content management? How is it going to move throughout its life cycle? What are the tools that we're going to be using? And how can we create new efficiencies between those tools? How and when will we care for the content that's already out there rather than just leaving it to pile up and die on the vine? And who gets to say no? This is a key question, no matter what your size of organization, that needs to be answered if you're going to have quality content. Who gets to say no to dumb requests? Okay. I'm not even laughing. Okay, so, wait, our screen's over here. Here's our framework. Okay, so let's take a step back and look at your 2018-19 content initiatives. Oh. Right. All right. So how are we going to take you and all the commitments that you've made, not just recently, but since content marketing became a thing, which was like 2011, 2012, or the things that you're looking towards, how are we going to take this and turn it into this? Because friendship is magic. And so is content. All right. So I have a listicle for you. I have five things for us to do. Okay? The first one, and this can be the toughest one, is I'm going to give you guys permission for a reset. Okay? So, and to demonstrate this reset, I want to point you toward the mother of all content marketers, which is Coca-Cola. So, in 2011, Coca-Cola launched this video called Content 2020. Has anybody seen that? It was revolutionary. It was beautiful. There were all these extraordinary illustrations. It was one of those where the person was illustrating and it was following along. It talked about creating content excellence through liquid and linked content. And it basically was announcing Coca-Cola is putting a stake in the ground and we are going to spend a ton of money on content marketing. And our job is to earn a disproportionate share of popular culture through the stories that we tell, provoking conversation, etc. There's this blob, compelling life force that was disturbing. And they even sort of demonstrated like how they were going to spend their budget it's a disaster. But people loved it. They went crazy for it. And this really is where I point to the beginning of the content marketing craze was with this video. Here's what happened then, is that in 2013, Coke said, we are really going to go for it, and we are going to make our content magazine our corporate homepage, that our corporate site is now going to be this great content experience that's going to capture a disproportionate portion of culture. And so here's what their corporate website looked like about 4 years ago. Double features, summertime happiness, 5 underrated college football towns, 5 energizing exercises for travelers, 15 insider tips on traveling to Dallas, pretend Instagram photos, and then headlines from across their different publications. Guess what? Now, in 2018, if you visit Coke's website, this is what it looks like. Now, we have brands, our way forward, sustainability, innovation history, and their blog, Unbottled, instead of the previous, which were music, food, family, etc. This is no longer a lifestyle publication. This is a publication about Coke. In fact, even their blog only features stories about Coke and Coke products and sustainability initiatives and charitable initiatives and so on. In other words, this website now makes sense. Just as deeply as they invested in content marketing, they also have disinvested in it to the point where if you go to their YouTube channel now, they have literally taken down all the videos. This, I commend them for this. This is bravery. This is, they have admitted somewhere along the line they tried something and it didn't work and they scaled way back. And the guy that was behind all of this went and started his own content marketing consultancy. So the lesson here, friends, is that it really is okay to scrap stuff. When we look at the content that we've created, a lot of times we think, oh, but the money we spend and the blood, sweat, and tears that we put into it, and it's out there, and maybe it's not working because it's not optimized well enough, or because people don't know to find it, or we need to fix our IA, or whatever the case may be. But honestly, take several steps back and take a look at it and determine if your content marketing is actually a strategy that is initiating a meaningful change within the organization and for your audiences. And if it's not, it's okay to scale back and rethink. Okay, tip number 2 on my listicle is to get aligned. So, this thing right here, this seems so basic, and I cannot tell you the number of organizations that cannot tell me any of these things except for whatever their tactics are and maybe a few targets. So, what I want to encourage you is this. If you know what these things are, they might be at the huge organizational level, and you can map your own strategies, whether you're in editorial or experience design or content marketing help and technical content, whatever it is that you're doing. You can take those and have those come down to functional strategies and begin to define your own if you need to. If you are lucky enough that you have leadership who has clearly defined these things, awesome. Make sure everybody on your team knows about them. If you don't have them or you don't know them, you get to. It is your right. If you are going to find your work to be meaningful when you get up in the morning, it's really important that you're operating within a framework like this. So go home and ask for it, or try to sketch it out as you think it exists. But get aligned, not just with your content team members. If you're only a person of one, or if you're a freelancer working for a client, ask the question. Ask for the framework. It will really, really help to make sure that your efforts are meaningful and that they're contributing to a larger goal. The second part of this is, you guys know what this is? This is a RACI chart. It's one of very few actual consulting tools that I find moderately useful. This is really, really straightforward, simple stuff that helps teams get aligned on who is doing what and who is responsible for whom, or for what. If you are working within a team or an organization where people seem to be passing the buck a lot on decisions about content or saying no about content or making sure the content is clearly structured or people can say no or whatever the case may be, then we need a RACI chart. And even if you just try to sketch it out in your head and your head starts to explode, go home, work with your team members, talk to leadership, see if you can't get this lined up. In the world of content, with as complex as our processes are, it's really, really important that we're all clear on who's doing what. And this is my requisite Princess Bride reference. This is the third piece to getting aligned, is that ensuring that we all are using terminology in the same way. When our consultancy goes into work with organizations, one of the questions we'll often ask is, when you talk about content, what is it that you're talking about? And oh, the many answers that we receive. So make sure that when you say the word content, people are thinking about the same things that you mean when you say the words editorial calendar or wireframe or page template or marketing. Make sure that everyone within your team and organization is on the same page about what that stuff means. If you are undertaking project work, I find that it's really, really useful at the kickoff meeting to start with a lexicon slide to just say, here, when we say this, here's what we mean, so that everybody, okay, yes, now I'm clear. Because oftentimes if you're along the way and you start using words and people have competing ideas about them, they won't raise their hand to discuss. Okay, point number three, actually know your audience. Okay, so this is the kind of article that I see all the time. 31 types of content we crave. Your audience is craving sponsored content blended with creativity. The content cornucopia, what content is your audience craving this Thanksgiving? I decided to spare you guys this infographic. It's really good though, I'll include a link to it in the slides. You all know what our audiences are actually craving. What they're craving is for us to listen to them and to hear what it is that is important to them. And to pay attention to their behaviors and to meet their expectations, to exceed their expectations. And a lot of times, audiences don't actually want to be challenged. They don't want to be inspired. They just want to be able to find the coupon on the website. So let's pay attention to that and give them what it is that they actually deserve. This is something that is a very, very difficult. This is something that I find in the content marketing community. We'll pay a lot of lip service to. But in reality, when push comes to shove, if we search for content marketing ideas on Google, we're going to get 3.2 million results. But if we search for content marketing audience research, we're going to get 598. This is a real reflection of a real dysfunction within content marketing. We've got to talk to people, not just pay attention to what they're searching for, not rely on keywords within Google, not continually battle that out for SEO, but to actually talk to them. There are approximately 1 million ways with which you can connect with your audience. So I really encourage you to think about, if you don't have the money to do it, you can at least commit the time. Even just chatting with folks in customer service or sales support, they know what people are looking for. They know what people are concerned about. They know what your audience's priorities are. This is not sexy stuff, but it's critically important if you're going to stand out as a brand and create any kind of brand loyalty, because believe me, that is not going to happen through meaningless content. Okay, number four, establish common systems and standards. This is a big ask. Yes, I did just use ask as a noun. I will never fall asleep tonight. So this is a big deal within organizations, because then we start to look at, again, this really complex content ecosystem that is a reality for all of us, no matter how small our organizations. And the bigger it is, the stickier wicket it is. So what are some of the common processes and tools that we need to instigate within these areas? With editorial, we need to establish an editorial mission, a style guide, a messaging architecture, and a publishing calendar. These are some of the key tools. With experience design, we need needs-based user personas, not just Christina as a 46-year-old mom who Now all I can think of is like reasons to complain about my children. That's not fair. My children are lovely. Thank you, parents. Page templates and tables, microcopy, anything within experience design that's going to have a direct impact on our content requirements, quality, and the shape it takes. With our content structure, we need to establish a common taxonomy to ensure that our content is well-tagged, well-structured, well-categorized, findable, and manageable by machines. We have to establish content models so that the content that we're creating can be appropriately chunked and repurposed for content reuse. We need to consider our authoring interface to ensure that when people are actually entering content into our content management systems or WordPress or whatever it is that we're using, big or small, that it is useful and usable and that they're getting what they need so that the content they put in is quality stuff. And then content reuse, structuring for that. And then finally, process. And again, these are three little phrases, and they're a big, big piece of work. Figuring out our workflows and roles, the tools that we're going to use to create and manage content across its life cycle, and this governance plan. And again, the core of that governance plan is really who gets to say no. What are the checkpoints along our workflow that allow for input, allow for adherence to standards and quality and guidelines and so on. Our governance plan is what makes sure that if we do reset, if we are able to clean up our house, that things don't fall apart again in 6 months. Okay, beware the silver bullet. Now I'm going to talk about AI. 2 years ago, Gartner predicted that by 2018, 20% of business content would be authored by machines. Clearly, whoever wrote this prediction missed the memo that we were still cleaning up our websites from 2012. When it comes to content, the technology is not the thing. Your new CMS did not fix it. Your responsive website redesign did not fix it. Buying 1,400 pieces of content from a fancy agency did not fix it. All the technology tricks in the world, including what they are telling us AI is going to do, which is mine the content for the most useful popular stuff and surface that so that it will be compelling and eye-catching and people won't be able to live without it, that was personalization. That's dynamic content delivery. That's not going to fix it. The only thing that's going to fix it is actual human involvement. This guy said it perfectly for me. I'm so tired of trying to dissuade people from attacking basic content problems with latest technology fad. I can't even AI right now. All right? So, here's the thing. AI does require three things from us. And yes, it's coming. And this is not the session for you to attend where I tell you what the five major trends in AI and content are going to be. Because I don't know. I know just enough about AI to make me dangerous. But I have plenty of clients asking me to consult about it, and here are the things I am telling them is that essentially we've got to get our houses in order to be ready for it. And AI requires three things. First, it requires a reliable source of data and content. So if your source of content right now or your sources of content are messy or unreliable, or not timely, not accurate, off-brand, irrelevant, etc., you're not ready for AI. It requires accurate information that is suited to the application. Again, all this is saying is don't pull out the AI unless you know what you're using it for and what your end game is from a goals perspective. And finally, it requires a framework for organizing the information. And that's that structural piece that we talked about within systems design. We need to have that structure in place for AI to make meaningful change for our organizations. Okay, so structure your content. Write like a person, not like a machine. AI isn't going to do that for you either, no matter what the pundits are telling you, and I know they are telling you that. But AI can't have a point of view, at least not yet, but I don't think that's going to happen for a long time. I am betting on the humans, people. I refuse to acquiesce to our robot overlords. And then finally, clean up your house. Start with a content audit. Everybody's favorite activity. Get in there. See what it is that you have. See what you can get rid of. See how you can reset. I wanted to share this quote with you from my hero, Jerry McGovern. He said, there's a deeply held view within technology culture that people are the problem that technology is going to fix. Technology can help, but without quality people, technology just helps you fill the garbage dump faster. Take that all the way to the bank, my friends. Okay, so now what do we do? Here is the final framework that I want to introduce to you. This was developed a very long time ago by a woman named Rahel Bailey, and she calls it the content maturity model, and I have seen it become so useful in just about every single scenario when I'm walking in to assist organizations with their content efforts, because a lot of times where people want to be and where they are two very different places. I'm going to give you guys a close-up look at this here. So level one is where you're really in a reactive state. You're creating and flinging content with little thought to its management or consequences. Level two is the tactical state, and this is where I see most folks sitting. The organization has adopted multiple publishing processes in silos without connections between them. Level three is integrated. Some planning has resulted in integration of content at the publishing side, but not earlier in the content lifecycle. So we haven't started to see the integration of those four quadrants. Level four, and I'll tell you, 10 years ago, I didn't know any organizations like this, and I'm starting to see organizations like this. It's treated as a corporate asset and managed with appropriate checks and balances. And then number five, strategic, where content is really a key aspect of an organization's digital strategy. I feel like at this point I should have a Facebook quiz, just like, which hexagon are you? So here's what I want to caution you. And a lot of times when you leave conferences like this, you go home super excited. I mean, you can also go home super depressed thinking about how behind you are. But you can go home super excited about the opportunities, the possibilities. And you may think, okay, we are here, but I want to get here as quickly as humanly possible. And you can't. You have to evolve. You get to evolve. Trust me, every single person in this room right now secretly is worried that they're really behind the curve. Coming to South By is so inspiring and so exciting, but also, again, it's just like this hotbed of FOMO. And so I encourage you, walk with this, take your time, and recognize you have to take, it's a path. It's a journey, right? What is that? It's the power is in the journey, not the destination, whatever. There's a reason I'm not an inspirational speaker. Okay, so reset. Get aligned. Get to know your audience. Establish common systems and standards. And beware the silver bullet. So, content first has actually been a real rallying cry among content strategists for as long as I can remember. And when I was putting together this presentation, I have to admit, I felt like I was under a lot of pressure. Like, I have to talk about the future of content. I have to talk about how technology is going to be the thing that provides the big fix. And really what I kept coming back to is that a lot of us feel a little bit screwed by content marketing, by the promises that we were made. I'm going to guess that maybe half of the folks in here are content marketers. And my hope, my dear hope, is that you have been provided with the support and the strategic direction that you've needed to be able to say no to certain things, or that you've been able to identify the things that are working and get investments in those things that are working, in the things that are driving qualified leads of people who actually want and need your product or service. Because that's where the power of content marketing comes in, right? But I also know that there's been this just buzz of discontent. And then in every piece of research that comes out from content marketing, from the Content Marketing Institute, they're finding trickier and trickier ways to ask people, and what is your ROI on your content marketing? Because forever people have just said, we don't know, or we're not seeing it. And the answer from the pundits has been that you're not trying hard enough. And that's not fair. What I would propose, in fact, is that we simply have not, as an industry, begun to really embrace all of the complexities of content that allow us to really operate underneath a cohesive and coherent strategy. And that if we are going to begin to create content that is actually meaningful, that gets us up in the morning beyond just being interesting and inspiring and unique, but that is actually meeting our audiences where they are, how and where they want us to meet them, then we need to start having the more difficult and unsexy conversations about how we're making decisions about the standards of content that we're creating. Who's in charge of those decisions? What data and learnings are we using to inform those decisions? Are we all aligned on those decisions? What happens if they don't work? In my opinion, content strategy is about creating useful and usable content. And in order to get to that place, I think that instead of talking about content first, we really need to be continually coming back and talking about putting the humans first. Not just our audiences, but also, frankly, ourselves and our teams. Because we have to be able to talk openly, to admit failure, to identify inconsistencies, to tackle obstacles, and to collaborate on those solutions in a way that's sort of open and safe and informed by the reality of what's happening. So I encourage you then to take several steps back and to think about, what is it that makes my content meaningful? What is it that makes it timely and useful and usable and relevant and actually something that is of value to our audiences? Sometimes it's a coupon, but that's okay, because in order to make content that is meaningful, we simply need to take several steps back and slow down and think about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And that, as straightforward as it is your big fix. Thanks. Okay, I think we have time for Q&A. Really, this is the only reason I used My Little Pony, is so I could show you guys this drawing of me that my daughter did. Are you kidding? Oh, yep, there it is. Bring it back. Bring back the drawing. Okay, so we have questions now, and I think you can come to the mic and ask them at the mic, or you can go to slido.com and enter South by Southwest. Okay? All right, well, I have two questions that people have asked digitally. If you need to leave and go to happy hour, I will not be offended. I encourage you. All right. Scaling content creation is a nightmare. And as I stated, it can't be automated. What is your best recommendation for scaling content without adding people? Okay, so by scaling content creation, I think what you mean is making more content. And my first question for you is, if you don't have enough people, that means that you haven't been allocated enough resources to create more content. And so why is it that we're creating it in the first place? Because one of the things about determining content requirements is being realistic about constraints. And resources are definite real constraints. So this is a tough question for me to answer, because my main question is, why do you want to create more content in the first place? So let's say then, though, I won't skirt this question, that for whatever reason, there's two of you and you've been tasked with creating 1,400 pieces of content about toilet paper. What is it that you do? So you've got a couple of options, and none of them are exciting. The first thing you need to do is create a system where you can actually plan for, from an editorial perspective, the pieces of content that you're going to be creating. I would really hope that you have an editorial strategy in place and some audience personas, and that you are mapping their needs against your content desires. I think that putting together a clear system on how that content is going to be created is really important, and having the appropriate tools in place are important. I can throw out the idea of a tool called Gather Content, which delivers really good, easy workflow for people that are when a lot of content is being created in a lot of different places. I think that you can sometimes tap into subject matter expertise within your organizations, but that kind of tends to add a level of complexity, because not everybody is a writer, even though everybody has Microsoft Word and they think they can. I want to give whoever asked this question a big hug, because there's no good, easy way to scale, to make more content, if you don't have good people to make it. You can curate it, right, from other sources. So hope that addresses the question at least a little bit. Oh, Lindsay, I have a massive girl crush on you. Thanks for being honest. Oh, you know how to bubble things right up to the top, don't you? How do you see video, I'll take your question just a moment. How do you see video fitting into content strategy as best practice? The cost can be expensive. You know, I'll come back with the same question. I can't offer a generalization about how video should fit into content strategy. A lot of times I've seen things that are like 20% video, 20% listicles, 40% blog posts, and all of those articles are crap. Like, none of that makes any sense. I know we're all looking for specific direction, but none of that is based in strategy. That's all based in sort of just like random tactics. What I would say is that what I have seen for video being most effective is really in the how-to category, or how did it get done. Anything else that's sort of more just like fun, entertaining, I don't see brands necessarily hugely succeeding in that unless it's with funny, fancy commercials. So that's what I would say. With video, form really has to follow function. I mean, I'm sorry. I said that right. Yeah. Awesome. It's time for happy hour for me. Where you have to figure out what it is that your content needs to do and what it's and who it needs to serve, and then determine in what format you're going to deliver it. Not just, okay, now we need a 12-part video series because that's meaningless. Okay, sir.
Hi. My name is Charles. I've been, you know, Facebook Live this whole time, and I was just wondering, this is sort of a two-part question, but I was just wondering, how do you feel about being content? And also, how do you feel about me taking your content? Or the bullshit about
that? Say that again. What was the last part? I was laughing at the first part.
Okay.
How do I feel about being content, and how do I feel about you taking my content?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, yeah, great.
I'll take my question.
Are you leaving now?
No, I'm just...
Oh. And deuces. I feel great about being content. Aren't we all content? No, I don't know. Humans, right. Are you still Facebook Living me? Now I'm self-conscious.
It's actually YouTube, but, you know.
It's YouTube? It's all the same thing. Robot overlords.
No, one's Google and one's Facebook.
Okay, thank you. It's all confusing. I think it's great if you guys want to share my content. It's up here. It's for you. I'm going to put the slides online. I want you to spread the good word of it's okay if content marketing isn't working, and here are some specific tools you can use to fill. I mean, I want everybody to know that. I want people to talk about it. I wrote a book about content strategy, you know, that essentially embodies all of the practices of my consultancy because I wanted to see change happen. How do I feel about you taking my content? That's what it's here for. Okay, right? Great. All right.
Thank you.
Great. Sure. Great. Let's see. How do you balance creating cheap, customized content across multiple customer segments versus high-quality, expensive content? So I think the fact that we have the describing adjectives are cheap, customized content and high quality, expensive content. Like, to me, what's missing in there are the questions I asked before. You know, I don't care how much it costs to create your content. I wanna know if it's relevant, if it's meaningful, if it's useful, if it's usable. I mean, those are the things that make content high quality, not fancy video production. I've seen plenty of really crappy videos that were really beautifully produced that had nothing to do with what I was promised when I clicked on a link. So I would suggest that maybe coming at it from a different perspective, which is, doesn't everybody want cheap customized content? Like, isn't that the dream, right? So don't think so much in terms of how much content do I need to create and how much money can I spend on it. Think instead of what kind of content do I need to create for whom to create what kind of meaningful change, and what are my targets that are actually in place to measure that content's performance. So I feel like I'm skirting that question, but that's my answer. Okay, content creation. Do you recommend outsourcing or in-house writers or something else? I've seen it work beautifully on both sides of the coin. I mean, we offer outsourced writing for websites specifically, and so for me to say that doesn't work would be to say my business model from the last 20 years is fake, which it is. No, it's not. So it can certainly work. I think that what's key when you're going to outsource writers is that you have a very clear, committed point of contact who's going to help wrangle stakeholders internally. Because to have what I have seen is that if you outsource a writer or a team of writers, and those writers are essentially at the mercy of a bunch of internal stakeholders who want stuff done, what you're going to have is like a glorified production staff without any real strategic direction. And then the quality is going to vary all over the place. So I think that in any instance, it's really important to have a centralized editorial control center, sort of. And frankly, that's what I've seen work best within organizations, big and small, even when there are in-house teams creating content or working to accept and create and produce content requests. Okay? Yes. I think you have to go to the mic. I'm really sorry.
That's all right.
I'll do a dance so you don't feel awkward. Okay.
Very tall. I sort of have a granular question about content sizing. So really, it's just me when I'm doing my content. And so they're like, oh, film our founder and put it on YouTube or put it on here, and then put it on Instagram stories. And I'm like, cool, so it's like long, and then you want it to be horizontal, and then you want me to make it a square. And I'm like, and I can't get the CEO to do the video like 10 times. Like, do you have any suggestions about standardizing some sort of sizing for content?
You know what? That is a great question. No. And I think that like what could help you a lot in streamlining that, because it sounds like this is, you know, when I talked about kind of aligning on terminology, this is another thing that like to align on, which is understanding of what it takes to actually create the content. Because I guarantee the people that are asking you to do that don't understand the amount of work that that takes. And so ask them for half an hour and just say, I am here to fulfill your content dreams. Also, here's what happens behind the curtain, and show them, you know, what the different requirements are, what kinds of work it requires. And then actually come with a recommendation about, instead of repurposing one video across 14 different channels, especially if it's a video of the CEO that nobody's going to watch anyway. Oh. You know, you might be able to say, I really think that our audiences that are going to be interested in this particular content are going to go looking for it on YouTube, and so here's how I would recommend filming it in that instance. I mean, otherwise, if they're still like, no, we must put it up on all channels, then you have to go with the smallest format that's going to look stupid on YouTube, but you kind of do. Does that help? Not really? Okay, great. No, but I do recommend, I think that I get a lot of complaints from people that people don't get it and they don't understand how complicated content is and how time consuming it is. And that's where the content therapy piece comes in. But that's also on my business card as content therapist. But I really do find that like sitting down and sort of saying, here's what this actually will take and what I'm going to have to ask from the CEO in order to make it look really great can begin to make a difference. So sorry, I don't have like a technical magical tool that's like resize your phone video for all formats. Does anybody have that? Yeah, this guy does, of course. Facebooking live guy. Okay. YouTube live. You're welcome. I don't know. All right, talk to him after. Okay. Yes.
In a couple of weeks, I'm holding a panel titled "Disconnected and Discontented: Why No One Cares About Your Content." And this whole talk has answered that probably better than anyone else could. But I was just wondering if you could put an answer to that in a nice kind of pithy sentence.
Disconnected and discontented, why nobody cares about your content?
Yeah,
nobody cares about your content because you didn't ask them what they cared about in the first place. That's it.
Yeah.
People want coupons.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Pithy as hell.
Good stuff. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I am recently the newly titled content marketing manager at a small liberal arts college, And I'm much younger than all of my colleagues. And I have inherited a lot of traditional journalists. So this might be more of your content therapy. But any advice on building buy-in on anyone that's like, I'm sorry, that doesn't fit in the box of my journalism background from 20 years ago?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you and I just need to sit down over a drink.
I'll be okay, but anything. It sounds like some people can maybe relate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I want you guys to meet over here after my talk, and I'll go drink avocado margaritas at Chris. Okay? So it's gonna be slow, right? You can't, I mean, this is another thing that I've seen is that people who are new and excited and enthusiastic about whether it's content marketing or content strategy will come in and they'll be like, da-da-da, here's my presentation that I worked 80 hours on to show you how amazing this is. And people will come and they'll go, oh yeah, interesting. And then they'll leave and just go back to doing exactly what they were doing before. Yeah. So your number one tool is to listen to people. Make sure that those people feel heard. Sit down with them over coffee, talk to them about, tell me about your job, tell me about what you're excited about, tell me what's keeping you up at night, because then you're going to begin to build trust so that if you do suggest, here's another way that we might want to try doing that, you have their ear, right? And in those conversations, make sure they are talking a lot more than you are, because that's what's going to make them like you. Okay?
Yeah. All
right. Again, it's about talking to each other. Yes, hello. Man in the dark.
Hi. So you mentioned earlier that content marketing may not be right for your company, for your industry, for your audience. Do you have any thoughts on generalities of what kind of companies, industries, audiences are not right for content?
Paper products?
Yeah, we ruled out toilet paper. That one's straight out. Good.
Sorry? Yeah. You know, No. I mean, I feel like, you know, part of what is real, for example, is that my organization does what has been traditionally come to call content marketing, right? Like, we have a blog, we are launching a podcast, we wrote books, we, you know, give talks, I mean, whatever. But for me, that's like sharing knowledge and not really, you know, talking about like DIY tips for what to put on your walls, even though we make napkins. And so I think that if there's meaningful, and the thing is that our audiences and our potential clients, the people that come to our conferences, the people that care about content strategy, they want this content from us. They do ask us for this content, or when we go and we talk to them and they tell us what they want us to write about. I think that if you are an organization and you do audience research and you say, you know, where would you go for content about X, Y, or Z, and your name is like 102nd on the list, then maybe content marketing is not right for you, right? And so, I mean, you know, an example is a healthcare organization who is like, we need to become the next WebMD. No, you don't, because there's already WebMD, right? Like, you need to tell me where to park when I'm coming to visit my friend in the hospital. So that's kind of where I would come from in any industry or with any organization is, like, what is the content that people are actually hoping for or wanting from who you are? Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. All right. What are brands, in your opinion, that are implementing content strategy successfully? So this is a difficult question because the brands, in my mind, that are doing content strategy right are oftentimes the brands that we're not paying attention to because they're the brands who their websites just work. Or when you search how to change a doorknob, you know, and Lowe's comes up, you maybe aren't even noticing that it's Lowe's. You're just looking to change a doorknob, and there it is, and then you move on. And maybe subconsciously the brand imprint is on your brain. But I think that people that are doing content strategy right are making the content experience so frictionless and so seamless that we barely even notice. But we end up with very positive brand impressions from those companies. I will point to my... So I weirdly have like a really super strong affinity for two brands that are in industries that normally people love to hate on. One is Delta, and one is for airlines, and one is Health Partners, which is my health insurance company. And neither one of those really do content marketing, except for Delta's back of the seat magazine, which they've been doing for decades. But What they do is they are both able to deliver the content that I need and want when and where I need it and how I need it and when I expect it. And so those are two companies that are doing content strategy right, as far as I'm concerned. Does that help? All right. Julia asks, I have five more minutes, right? Julia asks, what is a number one don't you see when a new business is putting together a content strategy? I think probably starting with the tactics is the number one thing that I see where we'll come in and they'll say, we want you to vet our content strategy, or we have a content strategy that we want you to look at, and it really is just a big list of tactics that they want to execute on, rather than sort of starting with those. And again, this is so super boring, it's not AI, but starting with really clear, articulate business goals that are not some vision, but that are actually measurable business goals or department goals or team goals or whatever, and your known user needs. And 9 times out of 10, organizations don't know what their users or customers need or expect. Not really. They're working off of assumptions. They're working off of super general consumer research. They're working off of what, you know, Dave in sales has been telling them for the last 5 months and won't shut up about. Where did my question go? Oh, my God. Have I been up there the whole time? Okay. Great. I don't know where my question went. Now I don't even know if I answered the question. Did I answer the question? Nobody remembers what the question is because the question is gone. All right, let's move on to the next question. I'm really good at wearing shirts that, like, the mic just totally screws up the neckline. I'm sorry in advance if that's been bugging you the entire talk. I know it's been bothering me. Just kidding. Okay. Does the focus on telling stories we've heard from social media companies risk creating even less relevant content? Are stories a substitute for strategy? Phil, where's Phil? Great question, Phil. Phil's like, I'm out. I don't even care anymore. that is a really good question. I think that if you are as old as I am, you remember when social media first hit that we were told to just dive in, right? Join the conversation. That just try it, you'll like it. And we're now looking at, like, the detritus of our 42 Twitter accounts going, what happened? Like, we woke up the next morning and everything was a disaster. So I think, you know, this idea that I remember Marriott was another company that just went all in on content marketing. Have you guys read any of those case studies? You know, and David Beebe won all these awards about, because he produced this film called French Kiss or something, and but he literally was like, customers are craving more content. They're craving your content. They're craving the stories that we have to tell. And I was just like, no, they're not. Liar. So, you know, I think the focus on telling stories is like, if you've got a story to tell, then figure out the right place and the right time and the right people to tell it to, or else just risk having nobody listen or pay attention to it. And I mean, maybe that's just kind of a low risk. I mean, that's low table stakes, right? We want people to engage with this. Fine. But yeah, I think that telling a story or telling stories is not a strategy, right? Like, that's a tactic. No matter what Coca-Cola tried to tell you, you know, it is, telling your stories is a tactic. So that's all I have to say about that. So stories are not a substitute for strategy. Stories can be a part of your tactical approach to creating objectives, meeting objectives. I have 2 minutes. Does anybody want to ask a question on a microphone? You want to go ahead? All right, I'll do my dance. Mm-mm. Not going to be awkward for you because I'm making it awkward for me.
Hi, my name is Hanneke, and I market toilet paper.
I knew that was going to happen. I knew it was. Do you work for Georgia Pacific?
No.
Anybody? They already left.
However, I sort of would like to even stand for the case and say, how many people know actually that most of the toilet paper get made out of virgin trees? So if you want to have a relevant story in toilet paper, make sure that you're not using virgin trees to wipe your butt, but you're using recycled toilet paper, 7th generation, that is, because if as a brand, I think you're driving meaningful change through the product you sell, which is let's not cut trees to wipe our butts, then still there is a relevant content story to tell because people might not care about toilet paper. They might care about saving trees. So here is to 7th Gen toilet paper.
That fulfilled all my dreams. We're out, you guys. On that note, happy drinking.